Arteta! What a strike! What a screamer! Isola! What a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippa, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Willian repays the faith handed to him by club and manager with beautiful goal against West Brom. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. A lot of people were against bringing Willian to the club in the first place. A lot of people fell out with Willian during the season. I think it is safe to say that Willian has proved those people wrong, that Willian has repaid the faith shown to him by the club and the manager, and we have something really special on our hands. No, I'm kidding. He's still a disaster, but it's kind of funny. He scored a beautiful goal, and good for him. It was fun to see. We relegated Sam Allardyce. So think about this. All the clubs, he's coached, what, seven different clubs in the Premier League? I think seven jobs he's had. No one's ever relegated him, except the gargantuan elite club that is Arsenal Football Club. And in relegating him, we moved ourselves from ninth in the Premier League up to ninth in the Premier League. So everything's roses. And now we get to play Tuchel's Chelsea on Wednesday, and Arteta can prove once and for all that he is the better manager and we're the better club. And I fully expect that to happen. And here to discuss all of that with me, plus the odds and ends that are going on around the club, I assure you we will make this entertaining for you, despite the whole season not mattering anymore thing. Paul's on Twitter, pause my pants, hold pause.
Woohoo!
Clive's on Twitter, ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
Okay, some big announcements coming up. We are on the brink of announcing a live event that I am so excited for and that I think we really have well-organized, laid out, thought through, and for those of you who are able to attend it, I think it's going to be something really special and a way to sort of bring us all back together after what has been a very, very challenging year, and I think something that we all deserve. So that's going to be coming shortly. A lot of you have left reviews, so next week I'm going to pick a couple at random. We'll send you a few shirts. So if you want to leave a review at Apple or wherever you watch, Spotify, whatever, whatever review you want to leave, 5-star would be cool, but I want it to be honest because honest feedback is always great. But either way, we'll be picking a few at random and sending some people shirts because I have been remiss in asking for that. We really do need them. So thank you so much to those of you who've done it already and to those of you who will do it in the future, Mom. And that's that's really about it. So we played Chelsea midweek. We beat West Brom at the weekend. I think it's fair to say it was kind of half a performance. We had a really exciting first half that was kind of fun, and the left side in particular was interesting. We'll talk a lot about that. And then maybe drifted a bit in the second half, let West Brom back into it a little bit. But you know what? It's all good. We're going to be doing a lot of sort of squad building discussions as we go forward. We're going to be looking at loanees. We're going to be looking at players whose contracts are getting ready to expire, the direction that the club has to go, with an eye towards the manager as well. Going to try not to make every podcast an Arteta in, Arteta out podcast, because that will just get tedious over time, and there's probably going to be a lot of that that's needed anyway. So let's start first, though, with this particular game. And Clive, I think one of the things that has created a bit of a debate is how you should use four essentially dead rubber games in the Premier League. Now look, I do know that you get a couple million pounds extra for each extra finishing spot in the league. Some people have mentioned to me on Twitter that if we finish seventh, we could be in the Europa League. I don't think that's correct. I believe the furthest down the table it goes is six. Do either of you guys know for sure? Because I think the FA Cup winner gets in and the fifth place winner gets in. But if the FA Cup winner is already in European competition by way of their place, then it goes down to sixth. Is that how you understand it?
I'm just looking at Spurs and wondering if we can catch them. And that's the only thing that's what I've been thinking about. Really.
So, I was looking at the table. I don't think we can catch Everton or Spurs without a
Well, and if you look at the fixtures, you're going to be even less sure of it because I think So let's put it this way. Aside from that, there is a genuine debate, I think, to be had about how to use these games, what the right way to use them is. And Clive, there was a lot of discussion. I lost thorn of myself on Twitter. And by the way, all of you were obviously blocking me on Twitter, so you wouldn't know this, but I do tend to lose the run of myself on Twitter. That's my verbal diarrhea zone. This is hopefully where I rein it in a little. Some of you saying, no, you don't. Clive, how do you feel about how he should use these games and how he lined up in this game? I really did get kind of frustrated, especially about Ceballos. I mean, his red card costs you a European final potentially. I mean, the manager had a big hand in that too. And he's gone in four games, has no future at the club. And, you know, some people have said, well, what do you want him to do? Shaq is not available. Party's fatigued. Aziz played it the, you know what, 2 days earlier in a reserve game. But also Willian, you know, do we need to see more of him? Where's Rhys Nelson been? How do you react to him putting out some players that I think we would regard as not necessarily needing to see any more of them for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, when that team came out, and I'm not a lineup guy, but I must admit I was on the edge of blowing up. And because I just thought,
new Clive, it's a whole new Clive.
I just thought, oh my gosh, is this it? Is this who we are? And then I immediately go to reason, as I do, probably too quickly for some, and thinking, oh, we got Chelsea on Wednesday night. That's why. Like, you don't put out a bad team against Chelsea. And then I'm thinking about Aziz and Balogun. They played on Friday night, found 23s and a 2-2 draw, which was very important. Both played 90 minutes. Not going to see them. Xhaka's got, I don't know how he managed to do his groin in the pre-match warm-up. So great. So that means he's out. You got Partey, you've got a little bit of rigor mortis from running around like an idiot against Villarreal, so he's probably being safe for Chelsea.
It's all here. The Clive I've been waiting for is here.
He's all being safe for Chelsea. And we've got these bright young talents out of West Brom and Newcastle, two players that could have easily played in those positions. One we never tried in midfield, and the other one none of us ever fancied. Now he's scored four games on the trot. We're all sort of revising our opinions. And so I'm not sure what else he can do. And I'm not a biased fan, as you well know. But I don't see what else he could do in this scenario from the Sapias thing. The Willian thing has been well documented. It's a deal that I don't particularly like. It's really interesting that he was running around like a 2-year-old, and guess who our next game is against? Maybe he fancies playing in that game, you know? And it just makes you wonder, but that I'm hoping that we can get an exit, and rumours of the MLS really fill me with positivity, but people know I'm overly optimistic, so there you go. So I'm not sure what else he can do given the game we had, the game that's coming up. In principle, Elliot, what you say about Zabias is absolutely right. Absolutely right. But maybe he could play Bellerin at fullback and put Chambers in midfield and just say, you're done with it, it's over. And he could do all those things, he can move people around. But in this case, I just think, you know what? Here's what it is. We're downhill to the season, end of the season, and just take it on board. I don't think that Arteta can be too criticised for not playing youngsters, because it's the youngsters that have saved his season, saved all of our seasons, to be honest. And we give youngsters a lot of minutes. In fact, we spoke pre-pod, I'm worried about us putting too many minutes into some of the youngsters. So while they're adapting still to the physicality and robustness of men's football. But yeah, it's a tough one, mate. At the moment, Arteta's in the washing machine, so whatever he does, it ain't working. No one's listening. People are hurt, they're scarred, they're damaged. Whatever he says, whatever he puts out, it's not going to be right. So just have to ride this one out.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a couple really difficult situations to assess, Reese Nelson obviously being one of them. And to be clear, I am not suggesting that there is some future Messi-Mbappe hybrid hiding in the squad that we are not giving minutes to. I think it is a question of whether you can use this game to say, look, you haven't had preseasons. It's rare that you get Premier League minutes you can give to people in low pressure, low leverage situations against weak opposition and get a sense of them. And can you do a bit more of that? I guess you could say, look, if you wanted to play the 4-3-3 formation, giving Elneny the entire base of the midfield doesn't fill anybody with excitement, but then you can pick two eights instead of a second central midfielder. So you can leave Ceballos out and give the Ceballos role to someone else. You know, and then you have the opportunity to play someone like Reese Nelson if you want to, or another player. I think people are itching also to see players like Balogun, Aziz. They played for the reserves again, obviously, but it is just a reflection of the frustration and tedium that we've experienced with some of these players that were started in this game. Now, to be fair, the game started out really, really well. For the first 10 minutes or so, it started out really bad, but I think we played well in the first half. And Paul, it's pretty obvious to say that everything we did well early in the game and in the first half of the game came down that left-hand side. West Brom had no answer for it. And I'm hesitant to overanalyze what it means when a really bad and relegated team makes you look good at something, because it doesn't mean you would have looked good at it before. But we talked a lot about how to line up in that European semifinal. I know Andrew from Arsblog, obviously, very vocal about wanting to see Saka as a left back. Well, we did get to see it. And opposition notwithstanding, it looked pretty darn good. They had no answer for it. Every time he overlapped, he was in space. Had a number of really dangerous crosses that just didn't quite find someone. He was devastatingly effective. So, I mean, first of all, if you want to talk a little bit about the performance itself, certainly, and also if that this gives you any frustration about it not being a solution we looked to try previously.
So, like, the performance and this game, I mean, I don't buy the it's a dead rubber. It's a dead rubber for a lot of people, but it's not a dead rubber for Arteta. If you're Arteta, you're going to put out a good team, and you're trying to get a decent result. And that's a balance, right? He's got two, three different factors going on there. He needs to rotate for Chelsea. He needs to play good football. He needs to be honest with the Premier League, right? There's relegation. There's promotion. There's other things going on with other teams. And you don't want to signal to your team that they're basically on vacation, or he might lose four games on the trot. Then see how his job looks going into the summer. So I think the idea that he could have played anybody and it didn't matter is wrong. I also think the idea that he should vindictively punish Ceballos for the fact that the guy got a red card or what was a soft yellow, even if he had a stronger challenge earlier in the game, doesn't make sense to me. We wouldn't have half the team on the pitch if you were vindictively punished for the fact that you made a mistake at some stage. I don't think he should signal to players that because they're low knees, they don't matter. I don't know who else he should have played instead of Ceballos. In terms of the playing Willian, maybe we should just shun him. I mean, we own him for 3 years. I don't see why he wouldn't play Willian in this game. And I don't see why whatever we plan to do with him in the summer or whatever he plans to do, you do anything to undermine the relationship there. He had a pretty good game. He scored a scorch of a free kick. He's good at certain things. We may well own him for a couple more seasons. So I think if you're a manager and you're in the hot seat that he's in, you got a lot of things going on. And I personally think it's fine to question all the choices. It's just you can't put too much mustard on it, because if you were in the hot spot, you'd make your decisions. They wouldn't be everybody else's. So I thought the lineup, I mean, like, whatever, really. He's got to do what he's got to do. And there's the stuff we don't know about, the stuff, you know, fitness, where people are at mentally, all that kind of stuff. It's just, like, I have no problem that we question it. It's just, how much mustard do you put on it? Like, the performance was good. To say that West Brom are crap, well, they are obviously a bit crap, but they've been giving teams a lot of trouble lately, so it wasn't a nothing team we were against. Somehow we managed to absolutely pummel them along the left, which brings you to probably your more favorite part of the question, which was the Saka thing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And yeah, the decision to base the run into the critical games around Xhaka left back, I've less of a concern about whether it was Saka we played there. Like, I don't know why we dropped Cedric. I know he screwed up and cost us a goal, but then so has Xhaka on a number of occasions. And in fact, we've conceded a couple through Xhaka at left back, even though he's done admirably well for a non-left back. I mean, which defender, which player in the bottom half of the field for us in the last couple of months hasn't screwed up and let in a goal? There might be one, maybe two. And he was generally fairly good. So there were two options, right? If Arteta, rather than playing Xhaka, I don't get what the upside of playing Xhaka was. What tactically did it do for us from a positive standpoint? And if he didn't want to play Saka there, which I understand in the first one or two games when we were swapping out for Cedric, maybe Saka was coming back to full fitness and maybe you don't want to run him up and down that wing. But after a game or two, why not Saka? And if not Saka because you want him up front, why not Cedric? It was a massive contortion of how we were playing. And again, I don't know what the upside was apart from he didn't have to play Cedric at left back. I mean, a bit more distribution from the left corner. I mean, so what? I mean, you don't change everything over for that. And yeah, him Willian combined quite nicely with them. Ceballos zipping a few balls to Saka. All made some nice triangles, but yeah, Saka tore it up and they didn't really adapt to it. And, you know, what, four or five balls through the corridor of uncertainty, and Smith Rowe got on the end of one of them. Martinelli could have got, and Smith Rowe could have got on the end of another one. I mean, we just absolutely ripped them one, tore their epithelium on the left-hand side of the pitch, and it was fun.
Yeah, it was, and I enjoyed it. And I mean, like, so the only thing I'm going to say take issue with, but that's stronger than I mean it,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, go for it. The only thing, look, I know lots of people agree with your viewpoint, and I do tend to find myself in a minority.
I disagree with that strongly. Okay. no, I just think...
A lot of people agree with me, Elliot.
That is definitely true. Look, the point of a coach is to try to win the game in front of him. You just... It's you're never going to get a coach to say this game is meaningless. I fully acknowledge that. The point of a manager, I think, is a little different. I think you have to think a little bit more in terms of, like, can I use these next four games in a way that position me to be more competitive next season? Can I learn things for next season? Can I enhance value of some of my assets? Can I start to identify the direction we're going to go? I'm getting four games here in the Premier League. That's a lot of information I can learn. That's 360 minutes of Premier League football. It's learning something.
I'd like to keep my job.
I get it. But all right, so this is important. That is a self-serving goal, right? That is not necessarily an Arsenal goal. So I agree with you. He needs to win the next four games to put himself on solid footing. And how could I say to him, don't worry about that?
But it's not just self-serving. I mean, what state does he leave his club in if he goes into the summer and we've lost the last four and people say he's lost the dressing room and maybe he is starting to lose the dressing? Like, he can't... success begets success. You can't say, oh, it's...
I disagree with that personally.
Yeah, no, you do. But like, you got to play good football.
See, so you can, I don't.
You can't
can you explain why you
players
think that's
a, and have them sitting. Like,
I don't mean just, this. I don't mean this.
The first six months of the season was him having a bunch of players around who weren't happy, weren't getting played. Like, you can't just fucking throw a spanner in the wrench with four games to go and think it's like.
You definitely can't throw
instant.
A spanner in the wrench. Let's agree with that.
Yeah.
A spanner in the works, maybe. Aren't a spanner and a wrench the same thing?
No.
They're not? What's
no,
a spanner?
They're different. You're thinking of a lever.
What's a spanner?
It's like a wrench, but fancier. More working class.
Anyway, sorry. No, but Paul, what I mean is, like, so for example, you often hear the argument, oh, they need to play well this game, so, you know, going into the big game. Well, like, we played well against Newcastle going into the second leg of Villarreal, and it had no benefit. Like, I am personally
it's a different
not
argument,
a,
though.
Yeah, of course,
it's a different argument.
You
got to play good football. You got to at least try
you
to.
Should try to, and you sure.
You can't have Danny Ceballos sitting there for the next four games. You can't have Willian sitting there.
All right.
When you haven't worked out whether he's going to be there next year.
I don't
want to
get into
you
a big
play
fight.
Him.
I don't want to get into a big fight, but I will say this is a manager who's had no trouble freezing some players out. So the idea that he now can't freeze out Ceballos, who's four games away from being done at Arsenal, and just made—I mean, he has frozen players out for smaller mistakes than Ceballos' red card.
No, he hasn't.
Sure, he has.
Who?
He's frozen tons of players out.
No, he hasn't. He's frozen them out for good reason, and he didn't want them back.
Well, I would submit that your Arsenal career being over, having gotten a red card in a European semifinal, and you're a loney who basically had a come-and-get-me plea to Real Betis in midweek, is a good reason to not need to use the guy the rest. I mean, look, we just aren't going to agree there, which is fine.
Mm-hmm. The come-and-get-me from Real Madrid,
Real Betis.
He knows we're not re-signing his loan. I mean...
Yeah, but the point is, he's not committed to us. Why do we need to be committed to him? Just move on. It's fine. It's four games. Give it to someone who's got a future at the club.
Elliot, we needed a midfielder. Why are you going to freeze him out? Like, we actually needed a guy to stand there, and he's the guy. Why would you not play him? To make a point? To be vindictive?
No, not to make a point. To use someone, anyone, who you could learn something about, who has a future at the club. I mean, literally any player. I don't care who it is.
What is the point of playing any player in a position they don't play to learn something about
them?
No,
I don't mean a position they don't play.
You wouldn't actually learn anything.
Okay, well, let's move on. We don't agree, and it's fine. People in the comments can...
You could put me out there. You're not going to learn anything apart from I'm shit at football, or that I was surprised you picked me on the day.
And that's learning something.
And I had other things to do. How about you play Danny Ceballos because you're not a vindictive bastard?
Well, first of all, I think he may be a vindictive bastard, and I don't think that's always a bad thing. Look, we're just not going to agree. I think playing Ceballos in any of these next four games is criminally stupid, but we don't agree, and it's fine. Like,
well, it's not criminally stupid. It's another choice.
I think it is.
Yeah, you do.
I do.
But almost nobody else thinks it's criminally stupid.
I think we will find out in the comments. I think we are about to find out if people think that's criminally stupid, but we're massively bogging down. So let's not do that. My point here, Clive, is simply that these, and by the way, I don't think it's incompatible. I agree with Paul. You should try to play good football. You should try to win. Is playing Rhys Nelson over Willian committing to playing bad losing football? No, it's using a different player who could potentially be quite good and still play good football. So, like, I don't think saying we should use different players is the same as saying totally throw the game. I think what I'm saying is the stakes are low enough. I realize when the stakes are at a fever pitch and everything matters like life or death, it's hard to pull the trigger on some difficult lineup choices, personnel choices. When the stakes are a little lower, and we've seen it. We've seen a lot of young players get their first appearance under Arsene Wenger, for example, very end of the season, top four locked up or whatever the case may be, and some players were blooded. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I think he used Mavropanos against United once, which is a pretty big game, to be fair. All right, so Clive, one of the other players though, that we can discuss is Martinelli, because this is a thing we got to look at. We got to look at Martinelli playing center forward, and I think he may have a future there, and I think he's an exceptionally talented player. It didn't happen for him in this game. What's your take on this? I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are reading tea leaves, quotes, and how he's being saved and how he's been used, and we've seen him through the middle a bit, that believe that Martinelli's future is a center forward. And I've been one who thinks that it can be. This is just one little data point, but on this data point, it didn't really seem to fit him comfortably. So how do you feel about that sort of experiment and another bit of data that we can put in the books on whether Martinelli at center forward is a thing for the future?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that he tried to do it in a Premier League style. And if you're saying we should learn something about players, I think that was his learning exercise on the day. I think if Xhaka's fit, then I don't think Ceballos plays. And so, yeah, Martinelli, centre forward, what he sort of said, he can play both positions. And my feeling is at this age, where he is, I think the more room he's got to see things and arrive in, that you know, you should lean into his mobility. Mm. The fact he can go from one place to another quite quickly, and he's got a real desire to move into zones. If you stick him in a central zone, his brain says, I'm here, central pivot. I need to be available for my team when they've got the ball, and then I'm going to turn around and press when we haven't got the ball. You know, I think from the side, what's been really encouraging about him for me has been how he receives the ball and how he keeps the ball and how he can create. I think that's really important because then he can play in that inside left slot. He can still arrive into the box because he just gets there really quickly. But his ability to receive it wide, come inside, pop it off or put a cross in for his right foot was good. We've seen the left foot cross for the assist and goal. We've seen him do things in a creative way, which really makes me think the right footer from the left is a position which I think is key for us. It needs to be a scorer. Now, I was always thinking Eden Hazard type, you know, a real creator scorer, more of a midfielder than a forward. We use Aubameyang out left for a lot. It worked until it didn't. Particularly when we play three at the back, we need that square, that two behind and two up top. Two up top, the way Chelsea do it, is they have two tens really up high behind the centre forward. We use a centre forward out left, and it seemed to work because we hybrid it in behind. Martinelli from the left is an interesting player. Martinelli may develop into a forward. Martinelli coming on last half hour to be a second forward in the central zone because we're 1-0 down. I just think it's part of his development. I've been really encouraged by him from the left, really, because I just think he's so effervescent. I just think he brings something to the group just by the way he plays. And he almost determines our football identity and the pace by which we play at. And so I think he's becoming increasingly influential. I do think some Arsenal fans, including myself, I do go overboard sometimes with younger players, but I've been a bit reticent on him. But it's hard to hold back that excitement because he, particularly from the left, I think he's really, really good. I think there are better options at centre forward. I honestly believe that, also we all know Aubameyang's the best guy there, in my opinion. Lacazette's obviously had a good, strong season this year, but we're not sure about his future. Balogun's not really someone who can play from the outside. You know, he's going to be a central cog. Whereas Martelli can do both, and I think we should encourage that flexibility. And but don't get hung up that he didn't have a great game at 19 against big West Brom. You know, a couple of big players there.
It's not the end of the world. Cavani overnight, right? He's got to learn those movements from
his. It's not the end of the world. I think it's a really absolutely poor. I think it's a really good learning experience. And sometimes we're quick to shut these things down. And we know we must encourage this experimentation. We must encourage it because that's how you develop people. You
know? Yeah. So, his personality, though, I mean, you see the desire to just go score goals and get something from the game, Clive, because like he curled one over the right corner from outside the box. He dove in the two sack crosses, one that he just missed getting a toe to. I think it was just sort of a near miss day for him. And also the way we use the center forward is very, very different. I don't think it is just sort of your standard running behind and go score goals type thing. It's drop in, connect the play, then run in behind. It's a little more cultured. And so I think it's going to take time for him to figure it out. Can I add a quick thought? Yeah.
Not to open up the can of worms we just closed, but like one of the benefits of playing an established midfield, even if you don't love it, if you're going to play an experimental striker, is that's where your experiment is. If you experiment in two different places at the same time, one might argue that you're not really giving Martinelli the platform that he could play from. And
can I
think,
stop you for 1 second? I think no. That's a strong. I think that's a stronger argument. Argument to me logically makes more sense than just don't freeze the guy out to be vindictive. Like I think you make a really good point there, which is if you want to get a good look at Martinelli the striker, you need to put a little bit more of an established group of players around him so that you're seeing him not in some rotated U23 reserve type team. That to me is an argument I can totally understand. Clive, it sounds like you want to come back on that.
Yeah, and I think you've now got the film. You've now got him in a Premier League start. You've got the film to see what he can do. He can go back and analyse it. He can improve his game. This was a big day for him. You know, seeing a forward start for Arsenal. It's a big day, right? So, and from this day, he'll create a new base for him, maybe a different way of receiving the ball. This is where you get your detailed analyst coach to talk about body position and things like that, his movement. Every game you can learn something. And I'm really encouraged. A few weeks ago, he wasn't getting starts. You know, he's getting starts now and he's really becoming more influential. And as we expect some summer turnover this year, he's going to go up the pecking order. It's down to him. He's not the sort of kid who's going to sit around and wait for other people to... he's going to rip that shirt off their backs. So,
can I add a bit?
Yeah, please.
So one of the things I've really liked, because we were all sweating why Martinelli wasn't playing, but you could see from his body language, even if he only got 10 minutes or 20 minutes, like he seemed really into it. So I kind of chilled a little bit that maybe him and Arteta are on the same page. I think the same was true with Pepe, where we weren't seeing enough of him, and I was concerned, but I, again, looked at the body language with Pepe when he'd get on the pitch or you'd see him out and about. And in this game in particular, he struggled a bit against their fullback. It took him a while to get going. I think he was maybe a little better than on the rewatch, I think he was a bit better than I thought he was. I think he did a little better. He had some good switch passes and some other stuff, some good connectivity stuff. But he was patient. And where previously you might see his head go down, in this game, he seemed to stay positive the whole time. And his work rate defensively, getting up and back and stuff, he's grown over the last season. And I kind of hope, like, I think him and Arteta are on the same page. And I think Martinelli and Arteta, I mean, there should be a lot of good coaching going on there, given Arteta's time with Sané and with Sterling. Working with those guys to teach them their roles and their paths, because Martinelli's brilliant but raw, and we all know that, right? He's got one of his problems is that he kind of has the cheat code of speed and power and energy, which can lead him into bad habits because coming up through the leagues in Brazil or kind of the minutes he's got for us, he's been able to do great things without necessarily always being in the right place and following the script. And the fact that he has the chance to learn how to do it right, to learn the movements, to learn the routes, to learn the positions, the interplay with other players is what you're looking for. And he seems to have stayed very positive during that. And his reward is he gets a shot up front as a striker, which will develop him.
Yep. I mean, the interesting thing about Pepe is I'm not convinced he had a great game, but of course he scores a golazo. And like the thing that's hard for me, Clive, with Pepe is that always seems to be in there with him. You know what I mean? And so for a team that struggles to score goals and has struggled all season to score goals, I find myself with a little bit of the Alexis conundrum with Pepe, but not as good a player, which is he's going to do a lot of things that drive you crazy, but he has that capability to produce really extraordinary end product. Now, not at the level Alexis did. Alexis is a much better player. But Pepe has that in there. One thing that I thought was important for his goal is that Chambers makes the overlapping run to take the defender away, which when Bellerin was playing, they seemed to kind of get in each other's space, which was no good. So how do you evaluate a player like Pepe who, in terms of ball striking and finishing things like that, like he has the sensational in there. I mean, I guess every player has it to some extent, but I feel like he's someone who can consistently produce some end product, but he has periods of the game where he just really struggles. The thing that surprises me a lot is when he's in midfield, like when he's carrying the ball forward, he has no trouble beating guys. But in the final third, he doesn't really beat guys 1v1 a lot. He gets the ball taken away from him. So did you sort of struggle to come away from this Pepe performance with any clear feeling, or are you just thrilled by the goal and you think that that's the story?
No, the goal was nice. I think if I was to ask you, you know, when do you feel more excited about him, it's probably when he's around the box, you know, probably around that area. Because I think he's a very good first-time striker of the ball. He can obviously shape it from the right and left. His ability to kick a football is actually quite good. I listened to Adrian Clarke say something, actually, and I'm working this player out still. I think I want to get excited about him, but then when the moment comes, he doesn't always show. And Adrian Clarke sort of said something I thought was very astute. He sort of said, in the lower games against lower opposition, Pepe's absolutely brilliant. He hasn't managed to impact the higher level games yet. I'm not sure if that's statistically true, and you may know Elliot better than me. I thought that's a good way of judging. Maybe he's just got to, you know, again, back to knowing your players. Against some of the lower teams, he has done well. He's done really well in Europa League. He's been really influential. And he's building, you know, he's building a CV at Arsenal, finally. You know, let's forget the cost, right? We know what happened. We know the story. We know it's 30 mil over the top. But it is what it is, right? And I don't like the way that Willian squashed his minutes. That's on my mind a lot lately. But he has been, if you look at his numbers, they've been okay for the time he's had on the pitch. They've been quite good. I think, you know, the best front three statistically is probably him, Saka and Aubameyang. Probably, not so sure with Aubameyang this season, but I'm fine with him. I just don't think he's as devastating maybe as we all hope he can be because he shows such flickers of talent. And when you stick that in the top corner like he did, and then next minute you kick a ball out or don't trap it, or that disparity is just too big for some people to deal with, and they just say, nah, not for me. You know, personally, I think he's improving. If an offer came in, I always ask myself this question, if an offer came in for 40 million, what would I do? You know, I'm not so sure. Maybe what would you, maybe it's a question for you, Elliot, but what would I do? And that really is a defining moment to say how much we really like him. We're two years now into the plan with him. He was just coming to fruition end of last season. It's been a unique time. No one in the grounds, no crowds. We're judging him based on not normal circumstances. Three new managers? I'm not too sure. Freddie as well, right? So a couple of new managers, different priorities, moving him around. It's been a bit tough, but this calendar year, I think he's been a little bit more consistent, particularly off the ball. He works hard on occasions, really hard. I still can't tell the day he's going to be dialed in 100%. I still can't tell the day for how long that dialing is going to last. But there is a talent there, and it just needs to be managed appropriately, put in, put out, trusted. I think there's something more there. How much more? I'm not really sure. I'm generally not sure anymore. But there's enough there to play for Arsenal, that's for sure. And if he's trusted, I think there's more to come. I think there's more leadership coming out of him, more responsibility, much more accountability off the ball. We can get him to take those sort of shots a lot more, really make him a scorer. He needs a new message in my mind. Rather than be a creator, try to be a scorer. You know, we need more goals. We've got to change people's mindset and tell him, I want 15 goals from you. That's what you got to get to. Change the mindset, goals, take shots, get in position to take shots. Don't stand in easy positions. I'm talking less about him being on the touchline as I used to do about 6 months ago. I'm talking less about his starting position now because he's into more better areas. So more of that to come. I think we'll see a bit more. How much more? I'm really not sure. But it may never satisfy the people that say 72 million, but the talent is definitely improving.
Yeah. What a fascinating question. I mean, Paul, I'll just put it to you because I think it's really interesting. What if there was a 40 million offer for Pepe? Would you take it?
Probably. I think the issue is, do we know what to do with 40 million and who do we use it better? Assuming we had our shit together, I don't know he's a perfect player for us in terms of style. He's coming along. I think the news out of this game was not that he had a great game, it's that he had a kind of a challenging game, a bit of a mixed game, but he stuck with it all the way along. I still think that just his application, the kind of focus and energy he brings is a little off. So yeah, I'd take the 40 million and go and get myself the player I really wanted. But I think he's come on in leaps and bounds in terms of his application, like his shooting, his finishing's always been great. But his staying in the game, his work rate, his sticking with the plan, I think he's got a lot better in the last few months. And he's starting to become an important player for us. I mean, he's playing in the sense that he's playing the important games. That wasn't the situation earlier in the year. And it wasn't just that we played Willian. There's a reason we got Willian. And it had something to do with the fact that two managers were struggling with where Pepe was at and whether he could deliver what we needed on the wings. I mean, we had him and Saka. Saka's a kid, and there was no guarantees he'd perform at the level he had the previous year. He's actually kicked on, which is great, but you can't play him all year. And we had Pepe, and Emery didn't rely on him. Arteta didn't feel he could rely on him, and I don't think he brought the maturity and the consistency to the game that those can be your wing options. So there was a reason he wasn't starting every game at the start of the season, but I think he's come on a long way in 6 months in terms of his application, his consistency. He's still not there yet, but he's a different player to the guy he was playing in whenever October when the season started.
I think you'd have to sell him for 40 million. I hate to say it. I think you do, because I'm not sure I see a scenario where he's going to be worth more than that. And I don't think his output has proved to be enough to make up for the shortcomings in his game technically and in terms of consistency. And I think you could commit to Saka being your right winger. I mean, he's 19. He's already amazing. He's the starter on that side. I think you could then find more opportunities to play Martinelli on the left and work him in more consistently. I think you still have Aubameyang, obviously. You have Balogun coming through. I think that leaves you a little short across the front line. I mean, Willian's still there, so that solves a lot of problems, obviously. LOL. But I think with that 40 million, can you address the 10 permanently? Can you use Smith Rowe as one of those wide forwards on occasion when you need to? Can you address central midfield, with that and some of the additional money? I think those are all fair questions. I think you'd have to do it. Because he's never going to be 72 million pounds. And could he go somewhere and absolutely go supernova? He could. He's been here two seasons. And he hasn't created quite enough end product that for me it justifies the shortcomings in his game. Now, that's not to say I don't love him. I have consistently said I believe in his talent and I think he can be an exceptional player. But every player has a price. And we have to start to get sharper about that. Clive, before we talk a little bit about a squad building issue I want to ask you about, because it's kind of making the news. With respect to this game, I think the Saka thing is so interesting to me because I don't think he's going to be our left back for the future. I don't think we want him to be our left back. He's the kind of player you can plug him in anywhere and he can look pretty good. But I mean, do you have a frustration watching this game and seeing how it sort of revitalized him to some extent? Because I think he was sort of going through it a bit. I mean, I didn't get a chance to ask you, so I'll just ask you quickly. Did this performance leave you with a little bit of a sense of regret that it wasn't a solution we tried sooner when there was more on the line? Instead of, you know, the Xhaka left back thing and then half fit Tierney. I mean, would you have preferred? I mean, it's so easy to say in hindsight when he's just had a stormer, but does this change your attitude about what went before?
Yeah, it's a hindsight thing. You know, I didn't fancy the Cedric at left back, so I'll be straight there. I didn't fancy that. I wanted the left footer out there. The Xhaka thing I understood until Everton came along. I thought we need to change this. I mean, my view's been consistent. I would have gone to more of a back three type shape. I'd have played Gabriel, Marianne holding. And I'd have moved up that way. I'd have kept my left foot on that side because for me, it was always important to bring the emphasis of the game forward and engage higher up. By putting Xhaka and Partey in midfield, what you have is you have the ability to go and engage the play and then create transitions. And Arsenal are a broken field team that transitions quite well. We're not very good at low blocks. We're not very good at slow build-up. People shuffling, we're not good in the air. We need to be through teams, down the sides, really quick, bang, cross, or get people broken field, driving through the middle, slip passes through lines. So to do that, you need to go and engage the game. So I say to myself, okay, I left my back four, doing Everton, I have four centre-backs at the back, don't care, Xhaka and Partey there, front four diamond, go and get it. Go and get the game. So I would have done that, so I'm honest with you, but when you see this system yesterday, and the way it sort of works with Chambers more tucked in as a right back, you've got your two centre backs, you're exposing your quickest left back to the biggest distance in Gabriel. So when Saka goes, he goes. You can imagine that Xhaka playing on that side, just feeding him down that left hand side. You have an inside forward on the left hand side who now naturally tucks in, create triangles. It's more what we used to. It's easier to replicate. And so it must be frustrating for people who said this from the start, let's do this, to watch that work so easily. And Saka makes football look easy, doesn't he? You know, he just does his little overlap. He keeps getting in. What's happening? Why can't you stop him? I know he's going to do it. You can't stop him. He's just so quick, so sharp. He's just so clever how he moves. He reads the player on the ball. He knows when to go. He drives. He commits to his runs. Said this yesterday, when he arrives calmly. He's got a lovely flat-footed cross. He strikes a ball. The ball's got messages on it. I mean, what's not to like? He lost a little bit of form on the right. You did spot this earlier, and he's been crowded a little bit on the right. He's forced to play a little bit deeper. We weren't progressing on the right.
Is it fair to say our right side's been a bit of a challenge generally versus the left for whoever's been out there because the fullback situation's been so varied and that side's just not as strong generally?
It is, and so we lost Luiz and the right back situation. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lost Luiz and he just dropped it over the top, so Saka ran straight onto it. And now he can't do his first phase run. You know, the sort of thing that Bellerin did in the first, in one of the games, first phase run, I think of the games, I can't remember now, but your first phase run cross goal against Newcastle, that sort of David Luiz pass, that sort of what it does, it makes Saka think, I can only do one thing, I've got to come short. They know he's going to come short because no one else can kick it down that right-hand side. And they smash him from behind. So he's lost the variation of service. And so he has to then come short. And so he's now becoming almost like Pepe was at the start of the year, receiving it in crowd scenes, dropping it off. You know what I mean? We immediately freed him up on the left-hand side. He can see everything in front of him. On his left foot, first-time crosses, it looks so simple. So the right side is a problem. You know my thought. I've been talking about the right back situation for a long time. The right centre half situation needs to be resolved. As soon as we get that, we can judge people who are playing on that right wing. I mean, Saka had a bad game against Villarreal, and I don't want to critique it's hard to build relationships sometimes with Bellerin, particularly when there's no service going from behind. Rob Holding's service into Bellerin was shocking. Bellerin had to make the most of it. He's then giving bad service to Saka. He's having to make the most of it. Odegaard's invisible, so that little triangle's now disappeared. Bang, we lose the right-hand side. No ball progression. It's always cause and effect. Our superstar, we criticise Saka, but he's our superstar, let's be honest. He flips over and life is good again. You know, so it's a challenge, but we've got a rebuild to do, haven't we? And it really does. That right-sided defence and how we pair up in centre mid will ignite the talent that we have in the top end of the pitch. But we must create that base before we see that.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, so, well, let's do this. Let's get to some breaking news. Because then I want to talk a little bit about asset value, about comments he made about Smith Rowe, which I think are really interesting. And maybe a little bit about this big summer transfer kitty and who on earth we trust to spend it. But as I said, there's breaking news. Clive, are you up to date with this, with the breaking news?
I'm not sure.
Paul, are you up to date with the breaking news?
I'm absolutely not up to date.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, then we're all going to learn about this together. Breaking news. Manscaped has released the Lawnmower 4.0.
Oh,
that's
my
right.
Goodness.
The Lawnmower 4.0. You heard me right. I did not stutter. It is the Lawnmower 4.0 available for purchase. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. To be fair, in the copy they gave me, they said that I should say this is your pubic service announcement, which I'm most certainly not going to say. I would not say this is your pubic service announcement. It's ridiculous. Oh, God, I've said it twice. I'm one of the first people who got to try it, by the way. It's awesome. Oh, my God. It's great. So first of all, if you travel at all and travel is coming back, it's got a lock button. I know this sounds dumb, but like it's a push button. It's this beautiful, smooth design thing. But if you don't have a lock, it can be in your little travel bag. And if it gets pressed, it can start buzzing and manscaping the inside of your bag. You don't want that. It's got a lock. Travel lock's got a 4,000K LED spotlight on it. Turn it on and off to see what you're doing. You want to see that area. It's pretty. Look at it. Look at it. Be proud of it. Come on. Why not? It's got four different sizes of guards. That's new. It's got a great gloss finish. It still has the ceramic blades, the skin-safe technology, the long battery life. But this battery now, it used to have a little plug thing that had to go in the stand. Now it's just an induction wireless charging system, so it protects the battery life longer. This thing is, I mean, I don't like calling a shaver stunningly beautiful, but it is stunningly beautiful. So I have to, you got to get it. It is the Lawnmower 4.0. If you've been waiting, and I understand why you are, now's the time. I mean, it's just the time. We're getting closer and closer to that live event where we're going to drop our pants and compare Manscaped. We're not going to do that. I'm going to stop saying it because people are going to do it. We're not doing that. But go to manscaped.com, promo code Arsenal Vision, manscaped.com, promo code Arsenal Vision, Arsenal Vision. Manscaped.com. I speak too fast. Get 20% off free shipping. 20% off and worldwide free shipping with the code ArsenalVision at manscaped.com. They have one last line on this copy that I could read, and I'm not going to read the last line. I'm fine saying pubic service announcement. I draw the line at this last line. I'm not going to read it. If you want to get in the comments in the mention somewhere and ask me what the last line was in this copy, I will tell you it can't be said. It literally can't be said. But the Lawnmower 4.0 is awesome and you should own it. Arsenal Vision is the promo code. Manscaped.com, 20% off free shipping. Clive, is that enough?
I don't know why I fall for your tricks. I was literally searching News Now Arsenal for the breaking news.
mission accomplished. Mission.
I should know better.
Clive.
Oh, I should know better.
Clive, Lawnmower 4.0. That's big breaking news, my friend. Okay. So, Paul, let me start with you. The Smith Rowe thing. So after Thursday, he made some comments that kind of obliquely, I think, suggest he was frustrated with Smith Rowe missing the chipped opportunity. And he made some interesting comments after this game. He says I want to be careful because I think the way this was done is really interesting. The way the quote, you know, reading quotes and seeing them, you know, seeing the actual physical gestures, whatever you want to say, facial reaction is very different. But he makes the point, he's asked, you know, oh, Smith Rowe got his first Premier League goal, are you excited? And he says, that's part of the reason why we are where we are, essentially, because it's his first goal. And that an elite number 10 at Arsenal should have 15 goals and 10 assists. Now, what I would say is, mate, you've been watching Kevin De Bruyne too much. We have not had a 10 have 15 goals and 10 assists. That's not a thing that's particularly common. But to be fair, he's right, that you'd love to get that from that position. But he says, you know, that the reason he scored his first goal is kind of where we are. We need 15 and 10 from him. And he says, and he has the talent, but he hasn't done it. I think a lot of people are reading it very differently. Some people are like, he's basically backing him, saying he's got the talent, he can do it, we need to be patient, he'll get there. Some people are saying, he's basically saying that I've had to use an inexperienced 10 who doesn't have the goals and assists as part of why I haven't been able to achieve what I want. I'm curious if you feel that, combined with the frustration about the miss, qualifies as having thrown Smith Rowe under the bus, or do you take a more charitable interpretation of the comments?
So at the time, I took a less charitable view of it. And like in our instant reaction, my stock down was Arteta's current press conferences and interviews. Like he needs to, he's generally pretty good at this communication stuff. And understandably, he's under a lot of pressure at the moment. And he looks like a cornered rat was the expression I threw out. He's looking way too defensive. And the problem when you're looking that defensive and talking about players or your squad is it's a very thin line. And when you look defensive, people take the more negative aspect of it. And I think he needs to protect Smith Rowe in his comments from interpretation, right? Because you can read it either way, and he shouldn't be hanging that out there. I think in general, he's going into these last few interviews with on his mind the fact that he doesn't have the squad he needs to have, and that he isn't being given the level of squad he needs, and he's trying to find ways of saying it. But once you drop in a player like a name of somebody like Smith Rowe, who's a kid, like does anybody think he's underperformed in any department this year?
Getting an incoming call there.
I love the ringtone, though. Is that like a samba dance or a?
No, it's the theme from the from Archer.
Oh, well, even better. Yeah,
that's why you love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
So like, he shouldn't have scored more goals. He shouldn't have created more. There's nothing Emil Smith Rowe should have done more of this year. He has overperformed for anybody of any age, really, short of being Kevin De Bruyne. So he's just, you drop Willian into the conversation, that's one thing. You drop in one of the kids, you got to be super careful how you phrase it. So I don't know that he really was trying to hang him out to dry, but you can't be defensive, be talking about the failings, implicitly the failings of your squad, even if you're couching it with, we must be patient, which he threw in at some stage. No, you don't have to be patient, Smith Rowe. There's nothing to be patient about. He's giving us everything we want and more. He has a valid point that the squad needs depth, and we shouldn't have had to rely on Smith Rowe and Saka. They should be fighting for play. I mean, we're delighted with how it's come along. We wouldn't want to see Saka getting less minutes, but he could probably do with a few less minutes. He could probably do with players to learn from, which was the idea with Willian. There is a point to be made, but don't. I understand why he's looking defensive, but don't. And if you are feeling defensive and on the ropes, be careful which names you include in your conversations.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Clive, I mean, I don't want to shut you out of this. I think everybody's kind of got an eye towards this because you start to build a case of how he's handled some of the young players. I mean, look, he's obviously loved Saka and used him a lot. He's obviously loved Smith Rowe based on how he's used him. But some of the comments, some of the frustration, his tendency to want to use experienced players when he can, some of the comments about things he needs to go out. There were rumors circulating saying he wants an experienced central defender in the summer. I think, the way Nelson has fallen out of favor and to the point of not being a thing that exists, that we're convinced exists. Eddie Nketiah, what's happened there? Driving away some other young players. I think there's a bit of a case starting to be built, and that case may be more ad hoc and coincidental than it is accurate. But do you get a sense that these are pointed comments that Arteta is sort of saying, I needed more experience in that position?
Yeah, I thought it was clumsy. The wording was clumsy, but I think he did say he has been phenomenal. That's what his words. He's been phenomenal. the reporter asked him, he scored his first Premier League goal, how do you feel about that? And it's like, he went, he's been phenomenal, but the fact he's our second number 10 and he scored his first goal, that sort of tells you where we are.
That's exactly what he said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he said he's phenomenal. That's not a critique of Smith Rowe. That's just where we are in our cycle. That's him saying, by the way, guys, I'm in a bit of a project here. Give me a bit. I need more time. That's where we are. The difference is he hasn't done it yet. The difference was with Willian that he has done it and he's not doing it. Do you see what I mean? I think it's more critique of Willian, if anything. When Willian put that ball in the top corner, I didn't see too many smiles coming from Arteta. He sort of flashed to him and he was sitting there thinking, cheers, mate. Do you know what I mean? Literally, beautiful free kick.
Right on time. Willie.
And I put my reputation on the line for you and you turn up in May. Thanks a lot. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's going through a number of things right now around his decision-making, decisions that work for him, decisions that haven't. And I will go back to Boxing Day. When I saw Smith Rowe in that team selection, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. And I don't think many of us selected him that day.
I was angry. I was worse than shocked. Yeah. I was angry because I'm an idiot.
And when he came out there and they produced that performance, we were all spelled. We were like, oh my goodness, where's that come
stunned.
From?
Stunned, yep.
You know, and then it got me thinking, well, actually, was he really unlucky that Smith Rowe was out for 3 months with a shoulder injury? Was that his intention to play him a lot more? We would talk about creativity, the lack of creativity, playing two strikers up top, in the back three, no one in the hole. We had 3 months talking about that. The moment this guy could put one step in front of the other, he's in the team against Chelsea. I'm thinking, you're mad, what are you doing? And bang, it all turned around from there for 3 months on until Tierney broke down, right? So I think he's a huge fan of this player, always speaks highly of him. At the moment, it's washing machine time. Anything he says at the moment is going to be critiqued. Just got to win football matches, mate. Got to make good decisions, win football matches, and people will listen to you. The moment you don't, every word's going to get pulled apart. Mm. Every decision's going to get pulled apart. This is what we do.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And, I mean, look, I think Smith Rowe's ceiling, his upside, is as high as you want to talk about, as long as he can stay fit. I mean, he's a little bit older than Saka, but in terms of his experience in the squad, he's far behind him. I mean, when you actually look at how many Premier League starts the guy's made, it's stunning how little he's played and how good he is and how influential he is. I think he's going to be sensational. I think it's a bit interesting. Do we know if Odegaard was fit for this game by any chance? Was there any word on that?
He was on the bench, yeah. And I don't think he's been fit since that international break. And
yeah, because my only reason for raising it is, yeah, I mean, that has not worked out at all. And I mean, I realize he's had a bit of an injury and he played on Thursday, but like, you would think if there's any decision to be made about this player coming up and how much we want to spend on him, you'd want to get as many last looks at him as possible to really decide where we are on that front. Maybe that ship has sailed, I don't know. And that could be, I could be playing 3D chess there and overthinking
it. What would you do? Would you take him?
Well, so here, I mean, we're going to have a pod about who we'd take, but what I would say is this, like, I think this is where Arteta not necessarily having a number one first choice system is hard for me, because I think if we're going to play the 4-3-3 and we're going to have a couple of eights, I'd go after someone like Buendia, I'd go after someone like Aouar, and I'd play them alongside a Smith Rowe. I don't know that Odegaard is as right for that system, but if we're going to play a 4-2-3-1 and that middle position is more of a free 10, for lack of a better way to phrase these things, I think Odegaard can still develop into an excellent player there. I think as high as we were on him early, we may have been too high, but as low as some people are on him now, we're too low. So, well, let's move into this discussion, because I think this is the issue. Paul, we're going to have to figure out how to operate this summer to try to build this squad to something that doesn't finish ninth. There are a lot of people that think this is all on the manager, and there are a lot of people that think the squad is finishing roughly where it belongs, that it's a dead squad. I think, as usual, the truth is somewhere between the two. Since Boxing Day, we've been roughly the fourth best team in the league, which suggests the squad is good enough to be fourth over a season, in my view. So in one respect, that's no excuse for Arteta, because he's clearly piloted us to the fourth best results since Boxing Day. And what went before that was not really justifiable, but also that'll teach him to right. But to be fair, yeah, that'll teach him to improve results and take the pressure back on himself. But to be fair, he didn't have Odegaard, he didn't have Smith Rowe. I guess what I'm saying is, I think we all kind of agree where the needs are. We need a permanent solution at 10 or 8, depending on the system. We need another central midfielder. He's talked about wanting a center back, which, please God, someone tell him he can't have a center back. But, like, who do you trust to spend the money this summer? He was asked, will you have a sizable amount of money to spend this summer? And he kind of nodded, which I was shocked at. I mean, who knows what sizable means? But, you know, maybe the Kroenkes understand they're on unstable footing in terms of the fan base, to say it as judiciously as possible. And they need to fix this. We can't afford to be without Europe for many more seasons. But how and who do you trust to take a big transfer budget this summer and not wind up getting it wrong? Because, you know, giving us £100 million to spend on more Williams won't help. So where do you stand on this potentially big budget, and who should have the right to spend it? We don't even really know what system we're trying to build towards yet.
Yeah, so I think the Kroenkes need to and will put money in because they want to stay in the European spots. And they want to be able to hang with the Glazers when the moves come. And you can't do that if you're stuck down in the 8th or 9th or 7th. They need to become a European force and to get back into that. So there will be money there, is my theory. Otherwise, you know, they bought one club and they'll end up with a totally different club. And that's not what they want. So what was the question?
Because the problem is, right, like, Edu. None of us are sure if we trust Edu. None of us know what Vinay does. We're not sure if we totally trust Arteta, and we don't know what footballing system we're building towards. So how do you allocate the resources?
Sure. Edu has to step up, and my hope is that he will step up. I mean, we've kind of have him down as being Arteta's lapdog, but that may be something of a relic of the transition from being under Raul last year, who then gets the boot, gets fired. So you don't want to be too closely. If you think of the interviews last summer, it was Arteta who was in the strong position with the supporters. He just won the FA Cup. Things were on the up. We were improving. So you sit Edu beside him and you say, hey, these guys work really close together, in brackets. That's why we didn't fire Edu when we fired Raul. And so they kind of beefed up Edu's profile with Arteta, leaning on Arteta. Ironically, you know, I wouldn't say Edu's stock is particularly high right now, but Arteta's even lower right now. So there's an opportunity for Edu either way, and the need for him to establish his own identity. Like, this guy was an invincible. He was a force as a director of football in Brazilian football. He was a force for their national team. He has his own ego. Either he's crap, in which case we're in trouble either way, or he's actually a reasonably intelligent guy with good sources, a good approach, a good philosophy, and it's not going to be Arteta's. So this is the summer we find out if he's got cojones, if he has a mind, if he has a plan, and if he can step up. So I don't know if he can, but this is his summer. This is his opportunity. Mm. And he's the guy. Like, we don't know if Arteta is going to be here in a year's time. He's probably going to be here for another 4, 5, 6 months. And then hopefully he gets things on the right track. We start playing good football. People get behind him. And he goes on to have a decent managerial career at Arsenal. But either way, Edu needs to be selecting players not just for Arteta's Arsenal, but for the medium and long term for Arsenal. So when he buys a player, it's the right player for Arsenal and Arteta, not the right or the player Arteta demanded. So we'll find out.
Yeah, Clive, do you have a thought on that? I mean,
it's all about trust, mate.
You can't afford. Trust. Let's agree with this, right? You can't afford to blow it. Right, you can't afford to buy a 30-year-old center back for $25 million and another winger for 30. Like, we can't get this wrong again, because eventually you get it wrong enough, and enough resources are put in the wrong places that you essentially lock yourself into the position you're in instead of elevating yourself out of it.
It's all about trust of the individuals in the club, and let's be honest, we don't trust them. You know, we don't fully trust them. Some people trust them more than others. We got a young exec, we got a young coaching team, and they're about to embark on the biggest transfer window I can remember. And it's going to happen because contract lengths are telling us it's going to happen. Right? So we've got lots of people coming to 1 year, people on loan. people, lots of rumours about people going. For once, I always say it's going to be a big summer, but for once, I think it is going to be a big summer. So it has to be that way. But and we're asking people that we don't fully trust to make all the right football decisions. We can only base that on recent history, and recent history has been quite 50-50, probably worse than that. But in Edu's reign, it's, and Arteta's reign, it's probably been 50-50. You know, for a Gabriel, there's a Cedric. Do you know what I mean? And so people don't. Some people don't like Gabriel, but I personally do. You know, so
I didn't love him when he was running backwards. You know, backtracking for their goal. I do like him.
But yeah. Aren't you supposed to drop off?
I don't know. Beats me. I'm not a center back. I just didn't love him.
I have the same problem.
No idea.
I'm not sure why Ceballos is pointing him to the left-hand corner and there's no runner on the outside, which completely flummoxed him. But let's look at that goal again.
Well, it was easier than running back to actually track him, which he clearly didn't see.
He did kind of hit it perfectly, like anywhere else.
And double nutmeg.
Oh, it's a great finish, but he probably shouldn't get into the box unmolested.
Should
point.
We sign that boy? Sorry to get off track. Yeah, or am I on track?
But no, Ferreira's I took us off track by the mention of Gabriel and then moved us on to the game, which nobody cares about. So back to you, Clive.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about summer transfer, I've got a view. If you look at the team, I think we lack fear factor, and I think we lack physicality. I think we lack speed. I think we lack one-on-one ability in defensively and going forward. The players that we like, the players that I like, maybe I should say, are quite good at that. You know, they're intelligent. Someone like Smith Rowe, Saka, one-on-one, really good. Pepe, one-on-one, not bad. People that want to control their area, do their jobs. I like that. I do like these sort of players. People play personality for the shirt. You know, University Smith Rowe's performance against Villarreal was exactly what we need. That's an Arsenal player. So we need to add the things that are missing. You know, and I don't think we're stable enough as a team. I think we're too easily run. And I don't think we're devastating enough as an attacking force. And the amount of home goals we scored, it's a disgrace. It really is. And so the data's there for you to make these changes. And if you see this stuff, you've got to say to yourself, is this coachable or do I need to change the personnel? For me, you've got to change the personnel. And I don't care if the manager's there or not. If the manager's there, that's fine. Coaches come and go. Didn't bother me. But the players are what they hold our dreams. And they really do. And when you look at when I look at all these statistics and they come up on Sky, it says like most crosses, most defenses, most tackles. There's no Arsenal players anywhere near it. You've got middle-of-the-road statistics, middle-of-the-road players. The best players are the younger players for us because they hold our dreams and they can't fail. The older players are not doing it. And the middle-of-the-road players in that 25, when we get to a situation where we're arresting Rob Holding for a European game and he's the captain of our team, Rob Holding's a fine player. He should be third or fourth centre-back at Arsenal if he's lucky. For me, he should be at Newcastle, 20 mil. See you later. The fact he's wearing the captain's armband tells you that the standard has fallen for me. Right? Doesn't mean he's a bad player or anything like that. I think he's fine. But that shouldn't be where we're at. Not with our resources, not with our wage bill, not with what we do. So we've made multiple bad decisions and we need to get it right. We cleared out in January, cleared out the unsaleables and paid them off. The Bank of England loan. Now we've got people who we can sell and we need to do it. And I don't care who it is. We just need to do it and recycle and renew. And that's what we need to do to lift our ability to compete, to lift our floor up with too much inconsistency. Now, some of this is down to the coach as well. He needs to settle down. So, Ella, you keep talking about a system. I'm not sure. I'm generally not sure what your system is. Is it a 4-3-3 as everyone thinks it is? When we do that 4-3-3, we're not doing it with 2-8s. We're doing it with 2-10s. And that was what was exposed to us last week. We played 2-10s high. We had nothing in midfield. It's not 2-8s. It isn't 2-8s. You can say Partey's an 8. You know, someone like Basuma's a 6. You need that level of compactness. Look at Liverpool's midfield 3. They don't play 2-10s.
If we went for Basuma, would that suggest to you that 4-2-3-1 is the way forward, or do you think that it could be 4-3-3 with Partey being a little more advanced?
You know, imagine a midfield three. You know, just for argument's sake, right? Imagine a midfield three of Basuma, Partey, and Smith Rowe. It sort of works. You have a carrier, a third man loose, who looks after the ball. is someone that sits in front and someone who can progress by passing or carrying it. And you have two people that are quite destructive that can create transitions. That's a balanced midfield. Liverpool do it the other way around. They go completely shots of pressing, have three people that work really hard in to allow the fullback to be wide creators. Right? So Man City tend to do it with they've gone more of a 4-2-3-1, but when they've got good possession, Gundogan goes straight in front of Rodri, and it's 1-1. Do you know what I mean? And so then they progress to play that way, Bernardo one side, Foden the other, and De Bruyne down the middle. They do it that way, you know? So they go, they put two in front when they're out of possession, and they go 1-1 that way and tuck fullbacks in, whichever side, whether it's Cancelo or Zinchenko, they tuck them in, whichever side they're playing. And so there's just different ways to do it. So I'd like to see a 4-2-3-1 because it just sort of makes sense based on what I've seen. Arteta's first game is a 4-2-3-1. I think he's a 4-2-3-1 coach. I'm not sure he's a 4-3-3 coach. Maybe he'll get there. And if he does get there, now's the time to do it. Mm. He needs to buy those specific players to play that role, to play that game. So is it going to be a Man City system with more creators, with 1-6? Or is it going to be a shot-suppressing Liverpool midfield with three dogs that can really progress and press and make sure people don't get out of their half? We're not sure, right? So me personally, I like a 4-2-3-1. I like to see Bissouma come in. I like to see a front four. We can move, rotate. I like a fullback pushing one side and tucking one fullback in. That's what I like. But hey, look, I can change in the flip of the switch. The players dictate what you really are good at. And that's what we're waiting to see, what players arrive.
Yeah. I mean, look, the problem I think we have sometimes when we discuss mistakes in the market and errors that are made is that no one error kills you. I mean, it can, I guess, but that's not traditionally how it works. It's the aggregate of all the little errors that destroy value and damage the squad and reduce your flexibility. Willian doesn't kill you, but Willian plus Cedric plus not selling guys you could have sold last summer plus re-signing Aubameyang that, you know, restricts your cash, and you go on and on, and all the little mistakes add up, and eventually you find yourself in a situation where the squad is flawed and resources have gone to bad places and asset value has been destroyed. There's going to be other big questions. What happens with Willock, Maitland-Niles, Nketiah, Nelson, Saliba, Guendouzi? These are all difficult issues to resolve, and we're going to learn a lot this summer. The thing that scares me is we'll either learn that these guys are a lot more competent than we've given them credit for, and they will make moves that really do look like good process, like a reversal of some of the bad process, and get us moving in the right direction. Or there is the scenario where they don't particularly get it right, and we're already sitting ninth and out of Europe, and you wonder how easy it would be to sort of calcify us into this no man's land if we continue to get it wrong, and it feels very finely balanced. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think we'll try to do a live stream ahead of the Chelsea game midweek so we can talk a little bit about that one at that time, and we'll have Patreon content tomorrow. So thank you again for everyone. This is kind of a difficult game to analyze, right? Because it's sort of a nothing game and there are bigger issues on the horizon, but I feel like it's a little too early to discuss those. So we're sort of in the in-between space. We're in the place between two, the purgatory of football analysis, but we'll be out of there soon enough. And the game midweek feels like a big game to me, so that could be a fun one to talk about. So I think we should leave it there. If you want to give us a review, again, we'll pick one out next week and send some shirts out. And just thanks so much for doing that. Paul's on Twitter, Pause My Pants. Thanks, Pause.
Woohoo!
Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name's Alex Smith. Please block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. Very important. Very, very important. Do lose the run of myself there. Don't want you thinking that that's really who I am, this crazy, enraged person. So best to block. But most importantly, we love you. Thank you for being here. We're going to do a really, really deep dive on the squad rebuild when the season ends. And I've got some really fun guests, sort of from behind the scenes and in the industry, people that deal with transfer dealings and things like that, who are going to come on, talk to us. We got some guys in the media who are close to all the rumors, some guys in the analytics community that talk a little bit about player value. So I hope you'll stick with us for that, because I think that could be some really interesting stuff. But first, we got to get through these crunch three remaining Premier League games, try to climb our way up to seventh. By the way, if seventh gets us Europa League, someone please let me know, because I don't think I can make heads or tails of the UEFA rules on that. So we'll see. In any event, stay safe. We love you. And we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Chelsea 0.